back to the second episode of this podcast, Ethiopian Adoptees Unapologetically Unfiltered. I'm so glad you could join me. Okay, I have to start off by saying thank you. Thank you all for listening to this episode. And for all of those people out there that have listened to my first episode, I truly cannot say how shocked I am by the number of people who have reached out, who have said how much they enjoyed it, the feedback that I've received, the questions I've received, and how much everybody has embraced this podcast and the concept that I'm trying to kind of build, or the stories I'm trying to kind of bring out and to the surface, that's often not talked about. And these individuals, they're not just adoptees, although I have heard from adoptees, and I cannot tell you how grateful I am to hear that this is helpful, that this is necessary, but also that I have, you know, close family friends who are listening. I've got some family members who are listening. I also have the friends of some of my siblings who are listening. And I don't know, I guess I'm kind of shocked. But again, I love the support, and I love that this is something that's interesting to you. If not interesting, some of you guys have reached out and said that this is really important and kind of better understanding adoptees in general, understanding us, whether it's me or my siblings or other Ethiopian adoptees that you might know. I don't know. I guess I'm just in shock, but I just did want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you for taking the time to listen. Thank you for the comments. Thank you for being respectful about it. And I do want to emphasize that this podcast is not at all to sell a certain narrative. I am not saying that adoption is good. I'm not saying adoption is bad. I'm just simply saying what is. And what I mean by that is those experiences that are true to myself, to those individuals that you'll be hearing from very soon. I am so excited for you guys to start to listen to the interviews that will be coming out soon with adoptee individuals. Most of them will be close friends of mine, but there are some individuals that have DM'd me and that have said, I'd love to share. And I cannot tell you how happy that makes me feel. And that is what's important. It's the truth. It's the truth that matters. And it's not to say that adoptees live a lie, but maybe keeping it in the eye and talking specifically about myself, I think there are aspects of my life that feel like they're a lie, or a persona, or there's like a Lidette that is so different from the person that I am, that's connected to the reality of events that have occurred in my life. But that's not maybe socially acceptable. It's not fun. It's not exciting. It's not the easygoing version of Lidette that people want to see, the one that they want to invite out. And although that person I've created as a result, it's like a survival mechanism, she's really helped me get so far. And I don't fault her for the person that she is, because she's been my rock. But I think now it's an important time in my life and an opportunity for me to say I no longer need to live in the survival mode. And I really want to tell people out there, adoptees especially, because this is who I'm doing it for, and letting you know that this is a reality. I understand. I get it. I do it too. And it's not to it's not to make you feel bad, but it's to tell you you're in good company, as much as it sucks. I know the feeling and the need that you have to constantly curate the person that is best, that will be best received by society, by your family, by some of your friends. that have might have conditional, or you believe have, you know, conditions in which they will accept you. So again, this podcast is not to sell a certain narrative. It's not to say adoption is good. It's not to say adoption is bad. It's just what is for me, what is for those that you will be hearing from. And I hope you respect it. And I will be completely truthful to say, and I want to be honest with all of you, that moving forward, you'll hear things that you may not like. Tough luck. No, but it's true. You might be shocked. It might make you feel uncomfortable, unsettled. Sit with it. Wonder, maybe think about why you feel that way. But be kind to those individuals who will be telling you stories, because it might not align with your view of adoption, whether it's within your own family, with in connection to your friend, whether it's with me, if you know me and you're like, wow, I don't like this. Well, it is what it is. It's the truth. And the truth might, I don't think it really ever can, it might hurt you, but it's not, I think overall it's a good thing. It is a good thing, because if anything, it's an opportunity to get closer to those adoptees near you, is to maybe shift your thinking based on the truth. And the truth might, again, it might just shock you, it might make you a little uncomfortable, it might make you question things. And those things are completely okay. And if you do have questions, I ask you that you do it respectfully, whether to me or the adoptees in your life or the Ethiopian adoptees in your life. And also, I want to make this abundantly clear. Just because I'm willing to talk about it does not mean other adoptees are willing to talk about it. This does not give you the right to go and say, tell me about this. What is that? What the heck is this about? And this isn't to say that those of you who are listening will do that. I will definitely say that I've had my fair share of individuals who feel entitled to truths about my life that maybe I don't want to say to you. Maybe I don't feel comfortable being honest about. And that's a big truth that I will be speaking more about. But just because I'm saying it, just because maybe the person I interview will say it, some things, it does not mean others will. Because I've already heard from some adoptees that are like, bro, I don't know if I can, if I'm okay with saying that. Like, if I say this, I might be telling something that my parents don't really want me to hear, that my sisters don't really want me to hear, that my brothers don't want me to hear, that my siblings, my aunts, my uncles, I don't know what kind of, I don't know how it will be received, what the repercussions will be. And I think that's the extent of adoption that people do not understand. Whether it's true or not, we've all found ways to cope with adoption. And I say cope because adoption is a complex series of events that, again, I tell you, it happens to you. And there's no guidebook for the parents, obviously, that, you know, that have decided to adopt the individual. But it's even worse, I would say, for the adoptee. There is no guidebook. You're not sure what you're supposed to say to people, how you're supposed to act, all those things. And as I was saying before about, I have a Ledette that's almost detached from me, that I put out into society that I know is well received, but that maybe isn't really who I am. It's not the total truth. I omit some things to make other people comfortable. That's a narrative that I know is true to a lot of adoptees. And that narrative and that person that you've created, most of the time, it's out of survival. It's, I need to act this way to be well received. I have to have my hair this way. I have to talk this way. I have to say I like these things. I have to say I'm going to do this with my life. I have to say I'm okay with that, and I'm not okay with that. Because that I've known through trial and error, through watching the people in my environment. Most of us have grown up in very predominantly white areas. So we found a way to, and I think it's honestly unbelievable that the body and the human and the mind can really do that. You know, we found, it's like an analysis that we've done. Okay, if I do this, if I dress like this, you know, these obstacles go away. And it makes life just a little easier. It makes fitting in just a little easier. maybe I'm accepted into my family more. Whether that is the truth or not does not really matter, but if it's the truth to you, then that is all that matters. So it's complex. It's difficult. It's hard. I totally understand. And I think that is, again, a part of adoption that is, it's a hard pill to swallow for people who are, you know, adoptees, but like the families and the friends and whatever. And it's scary to come out and say that. I've been feeling like this my entire life. Actually, this, what you did to me was really messed up, and it's messed with my concept of identity and self. It's complicated and convoluted, you know, my reality, my relationships, whether it be, you know, with a significant other or friends, you know, or maybe you're at a point in your life where you're like, and I think I'm almost there where I'm kind of like, you know what? I'm finding a lot of these things deeply troubling to me. I don't know how I ended up here, but I don't like it. You know, I'm deeply confused by it, and I feel like an emotional mess. But again, not everybody wants to be asked these questions sometimes. And I understand there are parts, the times in my life when I was okay at answering some questions, and in other parts, all of a sudden the same question might be, you know, somebody might ask me, and all of a sudden I'm like, please, I can't right now. I'm not in the emotional place, that things going on in my life, I can't answer that. I can't even think about it because I might break down. And I don't know how long that breakdown is going to be. I don't know where it's going to lead me. Some people don't want to be asked those questions. They're not ready. And when they're ready, they'll let you know. If you're going to ask, ask respectfully, but also be very prepared to get up. That's none of your business. And you have to be okay with it. You have to move on. But I did want to really emphasize that. I really, really want you guys to think about that. Whether it's, and it doesn't have to be in, obviously we're talking about adoptees, Ethiopian adoptees specifically, but I think that I do it too. Sometimes just when people are different from you, you want to know why, right? But we just, we're not, we don't, that isn't our right. It is not our right. If somebody feels that they can open up to you, and they think you're a person that they can trust, then they will. But we're not entitled to that information, regardless of who they are and what kind of capacity they are. Even if they're your sibling, it can be your twin, it can be your daughter, it can be your son, it can be biological, not biological. You're not entitled to it. And of course, there, you know, there's an exception to some things, but you know what I mean. So please, if you're hoping that this is, you know, some sort of opportunity to get to know individuals in your life, great. But be very, very, very mindful. It is not an easy conversation. And just because some people are willing to have that conversation does not mean that others are. And I might be like, what's the saying, beating a dead horse, which I think is kind of problematic. I don't know. It's a very violent thing to say. But, you know, I hope you all understand where I'm coming from, and I'm really excited to get into this episode, but I do want to kind of put out a trigger warning right now. This episode will consist of like a story, and it's my story, just because I don't have somebody to interview today, but it will talk about just some traumas, specifically around death. And I don't want to, you know, catch anybody off guard or trigger anybody. So this is a trigger warning. So just please be mindful of that. Feel free to stop. I'll try to be very aware of it as I continue to do interviews. Let me know what does trigger you and what other trigger warnings that I might be not aware of that people might have, especially adoptees. But I'm really excited to get into the episode. Let's go. Okay, so if you look at the title of this episode, it's called adoption, you know, an illusion of choice. And you might be like, what the heck are you talking about, even the adoptees that are listening? Although I feel like many of you probably agree with this. Adoption, as I've talked about it, as a young kid, having been adopted at the age of like 5, turning 6, all the way through high school, is a story that people feel entitled, and I kind of talked about it just a few minutes ago. They feel entitled to know the story. They feel entitled to the information, to the specific details. And they also feel entitled to let you know that adoption was a positive thing that happened in your life. That just because you're now a part of this Western society of better medicine or opportunities for healthcare, you have a socially, a societally more accepted, I guess, methods and ways of living, you know, living in a house, driving a car to school, to work, water that comes from your sink, you get to go to school, therefore it's better. It must have been better. You were given up and somebody took you in. Be grateful, be happy. It would have been so much worse for you to if you had stayed there. And this kind of rhetoric really, and excuse my language, but I don't know how else to say it, it really fucks with your head. It does. And again, this is a conversation I've had with other adoptees. Because then you take it on. Most of us adopted fairly young. My sister was like turning 3. I was like turning 6. So she was much younger. But you hear this at a very young age. You're so lucky. You should be grateful. Your parents are saints. Oh my goodness. They've saved you. They're like God on earth. Mother Teresa. Oh God, I've heard it all. And all of a sudden, somehow an experience that's totally flipped your life upside down, your concept of identity, of who you are, of who you want to be, what's real, what's not. You're questioning so many things, but people around you are telling you, be grateful. It could have been worse. This was the right choice. This was the choice. But then I remember distinctly growing up thinking, I did not, what choice are you talking about? I did not have a choice. Autonomy, I don't know what that is. I've been stripped of it. And it's not the choice between, do you want to go play outside? Do you want to go inside? You know, what ice cream flavor do you want? Not trivial things. It's life-altering decisions that have been made on your behalf. But once you are adopted and brought into this life, it's like they make it sound as if you had a choice or there was a choice, and somehow it's a bit convoluted, right? The wording is murky in however, but the way I've experienced it and the way that other adoptees have talked about it, and how we've talked about it, and how, you know, an honest conversation behind closed doors, where we're not offending family, we're not afraid to offend friends, and it's the conversation that we have. You know, we're deeply disturbed because we didn't have a choice. Nobody consulted us. Nobody asked. Or even thought to ask, dang, like, that's kind of messed up. Like, are you okay? Are you okay? You know, nobody really asked us that question. It was the assumption that it was good. It was for your own good. And that other people made a decision for your own good. And then you're living this life and you're like, actually, I am deeply confused about who I am, where I am, what the hell is going on. But you're telling me it's good, so I guess it's good. I've been stripped of all autonomy, so I guess it's good. I guess I'll take your lead. But inside, you're like, I feel it and it feels very wrong and it feels really uncomfortable. I feel very scared. I feel constantly anxious. And actually, a friend and I just had this conversation. We were always, and we're both like 22, 23 years old. And we were on the phone and we joked about it. And he's like, yeah, I feel like even now I'm just like, what's going to go wrong next? And and I understand that's, you know, a concept that, you know, a lot of people understand. You're like, oh, I'm, you know, anything goes well. You're like, oh, I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop. But it's related to like that trauma of a very young age. Astronomical life-changing choices are made on your behalf. When that is your truth and that is the foundation of this life that you now live, of your new reality for the rest of your life till the day you die, it messes with you. It's a different kind of fear. And so adoption, I really, truly believe, if I had to stamp anything on it, I would say is a gigantic illusion of choice. I don't feel like I ever had a choice. And for a very long time, I didn't have a choice. Even the way that, and I'll start off by, you know, saying this, my parents, I truly believe, meant well when they adopted me, my sister, and all my other siblings that are from different parts of Ethiopia. I don't think they had any malicious intent. I don't think it was meant to be self-serving in any sort of way. I would never say that. But regardless, they created a cycle and they fed into this cycle of kind of stripping me of my autonomy. I don't think it was intentional, but I think that's exactly what happened. That's what I believe happened to me. And I'll be honest with you, at 22 years of age, I feel the repercussions and I feel it really hard. It's all of a sudden when it's the time in my life where I have to make big life choices and I'm on my own and I need to do this, I'm lost. I don't know. I think a lot of people are lost. But it's different. I think it's a different type of lost that I know my fellow Ethiopian adoptees can relate to. You know? And so I think to give you a better grasp of what I'm talking about, and I think if I'm going to be asking other adoptees, you know, specific, if they're okay with it, questions about their adoption history, I want to be just as open. You know, I think I've had a lot of time to think about it and I'm okay with it. So I want to kind of frame my personal experience in the way I remember it from when I was, you know, in Ethiopia all the way up to not really now, but more generally up till now. What it was like when I say you're stripped of choice, that autonomy, it's a concept that you really can't attach to yourself and your experiences. Illusions of choice, an illusion that you have autonomy in very performative ways exist in your life. But when it really comes down to it, you're like, wow, no, I can't relate to it. By definition, I don't think I can say I've had those experiences. I don't think I've ever really had. I think that my autonomy was stripped from at a really young age, and even now I think it's something that I'm trying to grasp at, in trying to take on in the way that I believe I need to function as the Lidette I want to be, and not necessarily the one that I put out there that's socially acceptable, that everybody else likes, that makes people feel comfortable. And so I hope that makes sense. But let's get into it. Let's get into the story. Okay. So for this, I want you to imagine yourself as me. This is my story, but maybe trying to put yourself in my shoes, as they say, might give you a glimpse into what I mean by feeling like adoption is just a giant illusion of choice that you never had, and it's this sort of stripping of autonomy. So you're a girl in the Sidama region of Ethiopia. You have an older sister and you have a younger sister. You're the middle child, the best, clearly. I'm just kidding. You have a mom and a dad. You have other relatives. And you look to the left of you, you look to the right of you. You look all around, and as far as you remember, everybody is living a similar life. There's nothing astronomically different about the people around you. They share the same face, same skin tone, similar struggle, similar joys. And that's your life. That's what you understand it to be. One day, you remember, this is in fragments, fragmented parts of your memory of this time, but it's nighttime. You see your dad. He looks distressed. He looks sad. You see your sister in the corner, older sister. She's crying. You're holding on to your younger sister. Mom was there that morning. But where's mom? She left. She didn't come back. Mom's gone. She never comes back. You know she's not coming back. You're not really sure what happened. Years later, you'll find out she died in a car accident. Now you've got one parent. You've got your dad. You've got your older sister. You have your younger sister. You look all around and the rest still seems pretty much the same. Something's changed. You know that, but nobody's really saying much about it. You move on, life moves on. You go to bed one day, one night. You're sleeping next to your father. You're not sure if that's a constant thing that happens, or like a every night sort of event. But that night, your dad's sleeping next to you. You're not off to bed. You wake up, you're ambitious, you're excited. You're awake. I guess it's no matter where you are, five-year-olds are early risers, very obnoxious. You turn over, wake up, dad, time to get up, time to start the day. He doesn't move. He's not getting up. You try again. You're shaking him. Wake up, dad. Wake up. Time to get up. Time to get going. The sun is up and we should be too. He still doesn't move. Well, now this is strange. You start kind of freaking out and making noises. The people that are sleeping and in very close proximity to you are now waking up, and they want to know what the commotion is all about. You're shaking them. And what happens next happens so fast. Bodies come, shaking your father, and then you're hoisted up, you're pulled out of the room, screaming from what you remember. And you see his body laying there and you're pulled out and that's it. Now you're down one parent. Dad never comes back. Mom's not here. But you do have your older sister and you have your younger sister. Nobody really talks about what happened that day. Maybe it's because you were focused on survival. Your everyday needs needed to be met, so it's understandable. You move on. You move on. And so these events in your life will come back up in different ways when you're older. They'll manifest in different ways. They'll bother you in different ways. Some days you'll accept it. Some days you're deeply disturbed by it. You'll place Western concepts of, you know, the right to know about what's going on that event. But in that culture, in that society, in your culture, in your society, in that family, in that community, that was socially acceptable. You just weren't told things, but you were taken care of. You were nurtured by others. People helped out. But again, regardless of what you want, it'll manifest in other ways in your life and it'll bother you and it'll mess with you. But now there are choices being made behind the scenes. Your uncle has been contacted or he found somebody. You're not really sure. But he's talking about putting you and your younger sister up for adoption. Your older sister, she can't go with you. She's too old. She won't sell. People don't want girls that old. So she didn't make the cut. But conversations are being had on your behalf. A choice you will not get to make. You don't get to vote. And now I want you to shift your imagination to the state of New Hampshire. There's a couple, a happy couple with two daughters. They've decided they want to expand their family. They're excited. They talk about this possibility and it's well intended. The intentions are good. They'll have more children. Their kids, their daughters will have siblings. It'll be fun. That's what's going on. And now I ask you to shift back to Sadama. Your uncle has crossed the T's and dotted the I's, whatever he needs to. And it's the day that you'll be once again removed from an environment. Maybe not removed, but choices are being made. Choices have been made that will now impact you. And it's always out of the blue. It's never fully explained or explained at all. I've talked about this story, so I won't dwell on it. But now, you and your sister, you and your younger sister, are taken by your uncle. You see a van pull up with two men inside of it. There are two girls inside that, you know, you'll get to know a lot once in America, but you don't know that. You're put in, you're not told where you're going, you're not told what's going on. You don't know when you'll be back. You won't be back until much, much, much later. There's family there. They know that they're there to say goodbye. But you don't say goodbye because you don't think you need to say goodbye. You're shipped off. You're gone. Goodbye. You are now at the adoption center, the adoption agency, and they're taking your photos. They're telling you to smile. You don't have much to smile about. You don't know what's going on. But that's okay, because they ask you to smile, and smile you will. You're scared. You're uncertain. You're untrusting, especially of the adults around you at this point. They seem to be continue to make choices on your behalf without even explaining it to you. It's a little inconsiderate, don't you think? And now I want you to shift back. We're back in New Hampshire. The couple, they're looking, they're shopping, but they're not shopping for a bag. They're not shopping for a new car. I'm being a little dramatic here, but that's the way I've kind of always seen it. They went shopping for a new child. You don't know what draws them to you. Was it your picture? What's the little bio that they had? Maybe they had a sale, 2 for 1. You don't know, but they chose you. They said, those two, those sisters. And maybe you should be grateful because you know of siblings that have been split up. Because they said, I want that one and not the other one. She's too old. She has medical issues. Who knows? But you've been chosen. They start the process. Now we're back. We go back to Sadama. We go back to, I guess, the orphanage. And there, you'll meet two white women. One is older. You'll soon find out that she's your grandmother. One is younger. That'll be your new mother. And you're told to go embrace these individuals. They're supposed to mean something to you, something significant. You're untrusting, but you do it as you're told. And you'll soon go home with them. They'll leave for a couple days. They'll come. They'll leave. They'll come. They come bearing gifts, pajamas. One day they'll come, there'll be a celebration, you'll be dressed nicely, and then you'll be taken by these two women that you don't know. Maybe you thought the agency was your home, but now once again you're moved, and you go back with them, and you're now once again unsure, more unsettled. They don't look like you. They don't smell like you. They sound different. You don't understand what they're saying. And you get on this plane with them. This giant thing in the sky that is transporting you so far away from any sort of familiarity you've ever had. It's all gone. Now you've got one sister, you've got no parents, you've got no relatives. You don't even have people that look like you that you found in the agency, or your caretakers that look like you. Now you're with two strange ladies speaking a different language, telling you to do things, and apparently now you're supposed to follow them. It's what you're supposed to do. Your sister, your little sister, brings you a lot of comfort. She's the only sense of home, only sense of security, only sense of reality that you have left. Any She's the only entity that reminds you of what's going on, that there is something going on, that you're not dreaming all of this. There's something that stays consistent with you, and for that you'll always be grateful, because you'll hear some adoptees never had that. You can only imagine how tough that must be for them. But now you're in a new, you're in a new area. You are introduced to new people. There's this man that once again resembles the woman that they've told you this is mom. And then there was the woman that they told you this is grandma. It's auntie. And then there's sister number one and sister number two. And there's dad. And this is your new family. But you're wondering, I kind of had a family. What happened to my family? Where did they go? Why are you guys now my family? What makes you my family? I don't really trust you. I still am confused, and not a lot's being explained. I'm very fearful. Constantly on edge. And you take me home. So you say, you're going home. Not the home that you want to be, where you want to be. It's not the home that you understand and affiliate yourself with. It's their home. It's their family. It's their reality. A place where they are grounded in who they are. Surrounded by people that look like them and that live a similar lifestyle. But you're told this is home. And you go home with them. And for years and years and years, you are surrounded by people who don't look like you, who don't sound like you, who have preconceived notions of who you are, who you're supposed to be. And you're different. And you're okay with that for a little bit. You're different. They're different to you. But slowly you'll find out that you being different is a problem for them. It makes them uncomfortable. When you speak, they're shocked. Wow, you sound... You speak so well. You know, you'll get backhanded compliments. You'll hear them say to your parents, oh, you're such saints. They'll say to you, you're so lucky. And you'll believe it. And you'll find narratives that'll help you believe that. You're so lucky. You would have been married to an older man and been forced to have children. You're so lucky you get to have an education now. You're so lucky your basic needs are met and then some. And you're right about it. I'm so lucky. You don't feel lucky. You'll say to people, I'm lucky. You still don't feel lucky. Tell people, I'm grateful. Grateful's a stretch. But you hear it and you hear it and you hear it. So you create a person that believes all those things. That believes that, you know what? When somebody asks you, if you had the choice, you probably would have picked this one, right? If you had the choice to stay in Ethiopia or be here, where all your basic needs are met, you get an education and not married to an old man with forced to have children, What would you decide? You know what? You know what they want you to say. Even with the way they frame the question, there's a clear answer. Even their question, there's no choice. There's no choice. And so this goes on for years and years and manifests in different ways as you get older. And you find it harder and harder to believe that it was a choice. You find it harder and harder to answer that question because you can't. If you had the choice to stay, would you have? I didn't. But if I did, and if we're not putting in filler sentences that clearly indicates the question, the way you want me to answer it, in this consciousness and being aware in Western society of what's important in education, being independent, having those needs met, and then some. You know the answer to that. But when you remove all that, you said, well, if 5-year-old me had been approached and said, do you want to go with these two random strangers to a place that you don't know? I would have probably said no then. And even if I did say yes, if I had arrived after having arrived at the agency and if they had said, do you want to go with these random women that you do not know, look nothing like you, sound nothing like you, you don't understand them, would you have said yes? No. I wouldn't have said no. I wouldn't have said yes. I would have definitely said no. That's stranger danger. That's uncomfortable. That's so far from what I know. And then even if I had said yes, I'd gone there and I'd been around the looks, the comments. Even then, would I have said yes? Oh, I don't think so. I don't know. And you over time, you deeply start to question the identity you've created. This identity you've created to cope with the choices that others have made for you. With this life, this choice that they have made, or choices. In my case, it was my uncle. It was the agency. My adopted parents. Along, you know, a series of events, you know, I lost identity along the way. I lost decision making along the way. I lost the sense of control along the way. You're just essentially stripped of autonomy. Nobody really talks about it. And there's something deeply disturbing about adoption. And I say disturbing, and I mean disturbing, that nobody wants to talk about. You know it, you think it, you feel it on a daily basis. You're constantly reminded that you're living a life that's because of the choices that others have made for you. And you're borrowing, and you feel like, in my case, you're borrowing a family that's not yours. They say it's yours, but is it yours? Where's my place? Where do I not overstep? What am I entitled to? Nothing really. I don't know. Everything you question, you're not sure of. But others will tell you that you're sure. They'll tell you that to be grateful, that it could have been worse. That you're lucky. Imagine the millions of girls in Ethiopia that would beg to have what you have, to switch positions with you. And so you let that rhetoric become the mindset that you need to survive in this environment. But that gets exhausting after a while. It does. And I guess here we are now talking about it, being candid and honest and telling those people, stop asking me that question. Stop telling me to be grateful. Stop telling me that it could have been worse. Maybe it could have been better. Stop telling me it's a beautiful thing. To you. Stop telling me to, or stop telling, or stop reinforcing what you believe are the emotions I'm supposed to have. Be happy. Well, you don't even know the story. You don't know the series of events. And stop saying things that you don't understand. You know, you want to tell them, please, you don't know what you don't know. You're making generalization based off of very performative things that are going on. And when I smile and I laugh and I'm doing the right things, nobody questions, is she okay? Must have been strange. How odd that must have been. What a bizarre experience. I cannot imagine what it's like to be forcibly removed from your home, from your country, from your culture, from your community, and forced into one that will forever question all those things. And you will too. All right, everyone. I hope that wasn't too dramatic. I'm really trying to place you guys in a very quick sort of way. I'm not sure if I did that experience justice. I'm not sure if I did little Ladette justice. I'm trying. But it was a terrifying experience. I'll be honest with you now. I look at adoption and the things that I've been through, and I'm shocked at the person I've become. And I've only say that because I have really close Ethiopian adoptee friends, really even, you know, a few in my circle that are like, wow, you know, we tell each other, I'm surprised that we are doing as well as we are, because it would have been so easy to turn down really, really destructive roads. Some of us have. Some of us haven't. Some of us might. Who knows? But I really wanted you guys to understand and maybe get an idea, maybe a foundation for everybody's story is different. And maybe adoption isn't this beautiful thing that everybody thinks it is. In aspects of it, sure. But at its fundamental level and based on many of our experiences, It's not. It's deeply messed up, and it's confusing, and it completely distorts our sense of reality and our connection to our own bodies, to the point that we almost disassociate in a lot of ways. I know I do. I have. My friends have. We talk about our coping mechanism, and most of the time just taking that, those narratives that people push our way, you're grateful, you're happy, you're fine. Could have been worse. And we use that as fuel to push us along, but it's like anything that's unhealthy, it only works for so long. And then you run out, you burn out. And you sit here and you're looking at it and you're like, wow, nope, I'm still back to square one and I still have those same emotions. And because I haven't really worked them out and haven't had the spaces to work them out, I'm more confused than anything. I think what you'll find too with the interviews that are coming up, identity crisis, sense of community and like concept of family is really messed up in our heads. We're not messed up, but the series of events have caused us to really just performatively get through life till this point until we realize that we can't do it anymore. We're asking ourselves, what do we want moving forward? And before we can go forward, we're all going back. Most of my friends and I are all going back. Like, okay, wow, I gotta go redo that. I gotta undo that. Do things that my parents should have done. Undo the things that they did do and narratives that they did tell me to believe in or subscribe to. Family, friends. You have to almost go backwards, and it's hard and it's messed up and it's frustrating. But that's where we are, and that's adoption. Again, I'm not saying my parents' intentions or my family's intentions, they were never bad. They thought they were doing a good thing. They thought it was positive. And I know that we've added, and I've added, I should say, positively to their life, to their all their lives, and I've been told that. But I had the opportunity to, I remember growing up feeling like I had to prove myself to my family, you know, whether it be my siblings, my parents, my aunts and uncles, my friends. I had to constantly prove my worth to them, my place to them, that I was grateful, that I was, you made the right choice. I don't know. I had to constantly tell them or show them that, you know, I was okay with this whole thing, with adoption. I felt at home, that I was strong, that I could do it, and that nothing was meant to, fundamentally messed up. I wanted to feel like I belonged and I was willing to do anything I needed to do to believe in it. But deep down, I never felt like I belonged. I felt like I had been forced to borrow a family that I never said I wanted to borrow. And now I feel like I have all these requirements. Now I feel like it's almost like now I've become responsible for something that I never really had a choice over. And those relationships were really, really difficult. That constant need, and I'm bringing this to light because one of my friends said, you know, I want you to talk about challenges, an adoptee friend. And this is kind of a foundational sort of, I guess, challenge, but it's like, I think many of us from the conversations that I've had, especially when we were young, we felt the need to prove ourselves to our families that we were worth it, that we could do it, that we could try to be one of them. But we were always the adopted kid. You're always the black kid in the group. You know, we were always one, oh, like, whose kid are you? You know, or, you know, who's my, I remember my mom getting asked, or she would tell us that she got asked, you know, which one is your kid? You know, which one is your kid? And she said, oh, all of them. They say, no. Like, which one is actually your kid? And she's like, no, they're all my kids. And they're like, no, like, which one are your kids? And she's like, oh, you mean the ones that I birthed? Okay, well, that would be the two white ones. But, you know, you hear this in the background, you know, and you're constantly kind of, that's reinforced to you, no matter how hard you try, you are not like them. You're different from them. Your story's different. Your emotions are different. All of it is different. The way you're living your life is different. But you pretend. You pretend you like the same things. You do the same sports. You eat the same food. You'll perm your hair and you'll force it down. You'll smile. Be more approachable. Try to fight against those stereotypes about what a black person is, what a black person isn't, what a black woman is, what a black woman isn't. You'll get compliments about, you know, how you're the exception. You're the exception because you were raised by white people. And still now you're still not sure who you are. You created this identity to survive in the world. Even the identity that you've created and you worked so hard to put together and to get the acceptance and approval of these people. And even that hard work is still attached to the people that made choices on your behalf. You know, it's you're these things. You are so eloquent and well-dressed and kind. And I wish my kids were like you. You know, it's because you have white parents, you know, another layer of something to be grateful for. So I leave you with that. This episode, there's a lot going on, and I kind of let myself free flow here just because I wasn't sure what I wanted to say, and I didn't want to overly, you know, end up filtering what I wanted to say to the point that I've kind of lost the whole reason why I'm doing this podcast. And we'll get into it. We will get into it. And I am so, so, so excited for what's ahead. And I'm so, so excited to maybe foundationalize more of what I'm saying through other people's stories that you'll see. You'll be like, oh, okay, I see what you mean by that. You know, by the 10th person, and who knows how long this will go for, you'll have an idea of what the Ethiopian adoptee story is. And it's not one story, but I think it might change the narrative, which is adoption is this great thing that happened to the child that was removed from a terrible situation into a much better one. I think you'll be shocked. There's a lot of things that happen beyond closed doors that people are you're not aware of, you're not there for. And this is an educational journey for everybody involved. And I hope we all do it with arms wide open, being grateful for the people that are coming forward and are willing to talk about what happened to them. It's not easy. It's hard. It was hard for me even saying what I said. It's a lot. But I'm excited for this journey. I'm excited that you're here with me. And I am so excited to see where this goes. And once again, please feel free, whoever's listening, if you want to come on and share your story, please let me know. Reach out. We have an Instagram page, Ethiopian Adoptees UU, for Unapologetically Unfiltered. Feel free to DM me. If you have my number, feel free to reach out. I am grateful for this opportunity. And I'm so, 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 so thankful for all of you that who are supporting it and who have really let this be exactly what it is and have just been so supportive. I cannot tell you how much that means to me because, you know, it's me, I feel like, telling the truth for the first time. And so thank you all for taking the time to listen. I appreciate the support. And until next time, goodbye.